Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Celtic Life International podcast, or CLIP for short, where we offer up just a slice of Celtic life. Hey everyone, I am your host for today. My name is Caitlin Mearns, and I am one of the managing editors here at Celtic Life International. We have what I think is a pretty exciting episode lined up today. I will be interviewing our editor-in-chief, Stephen Patrick Clare, about his most recent trip to Belfast. But first, we're going to listen to a song that was recommended to me by Stephen himself. This is Alternative Ulster by Stiff Little Fingers, a punk rock band from Northern Ireland. Tell me about your trip to Belfast. How did that come about?
Well, we've been, Celtic Life International has been partners with Tourism Ireland for about 10 years, actually, about as long as I've been with the publication. And we have a great working relationship. And pre-COVID, we had been over at least once a year to write and report upon different stories. The trip to Belfast was actually planned way back in 2020. Early 2020, we began talking about it, but of course, COVID hit, the pandemic hit, and we had to delay it 2 years. But I worked with them and with the good folks at Tourism Northern Ireland to piece it all together. So, you know, they fly me over, they wine me, they dine me, they give me a few ideas about what to check out and what to see and what to explore. But this time around was a little different.
Yeah, so this isn't your first trip, right, to Belfast?
I've been to Belfast a number of times, never any longer than 36 hours, which is interesting. But when you get to Northern Ireland, Belfast is a great jumping off point. But there's just so much to see in the six counties in Northern Ireland. You know, you have the Giant's Causeway, of course. You have the Bushmills Distillery. You have the wonderful Giant's Causeway area and the Glens of Antrim, and there's just so much to see. And then, of course, there's the other big city over there, Derry, I shouldn't say it's a big city, you know, it's less than 500,000 people, but it's quite historic, of course. So Belfast, I began in 1989 was my first trip. Of course, it was a very different country back then. And I don't know if we could actually classify Northern Ireland as a country. We'll call it a British territory for the time being, although I'm sure that won't be used within, you know, the next year or two as we seek to reunify Ireland. In 1989, going back then, of course, was at the heat of the Troubles, sort of the peak of the Troubles time. And when I arrived in Belfast in 1989, there were tanks on the street, military vehicles, there were soldiers everywhere. There were all sorts of helicopters in the sky and spot checks, you know, just in the middle of the street, or road checks, you know, if you were driving somewhere. The situation was very tense. When I returned 25 years later, in 2014, it was a completely different city. Although I was only there for 36 hours, all of that stuff was gone. All of that, you know, the visible signs of the British occupation of Belfast and Northern Ireland, they were gone. There was still some lingering conflict, I guess you could say, or confrontations, but really it was a changed city altogether. And I've been there three times since then, including this most recent trip, again, never for more than 36 hours. So it has changed significantly.
Yeah. In what ways would you say it has changed?
Well, I mean, aside from the obvious, the decrease in the military presence, in fact, the complete absence of the military presence up there, you have an entire generation of younger people that have been born since the peace accord was signed in 1998. And a lot of these folks just have very little, tolerance or, you know, any kind of sway towards one side or the other with regards to the Troubles. In fact, most of the young people I spoke to on this particular trip most recently, really just had no opinion on it because they didn't care. They had grown to a point of just, it was beyond intolerance. They were just indifferent towards really anything political. There are a couple of areas in the city, of course, in the West Belfast area, whether it's the Catholic Falls Road or the Protestant Shankill, that seem to be sort of stuck in a time war. On top of that, you know, I think peace has brought prosperity. There are a lot of perhaps corporations or even other governments that were really hesitant to invest in Belfast and Northern Ireland during the Troubles. And, you know, now that they've had 25 years of peace or just about 25 years of peace, you're seeing a lot of foreign investment. And of course, where the money goes, people go. So on top of the foreign investment in terms of, you know, Google setting up shop there or Apple or Microsoft or European banks or whatnot, you see a migration of talent going into Belfast. So a lot of young people from Europe, from North America, going there to work. So there's a lot more money, and, you know, with more money becomes more money turns into more development. And so you've seen, you know, the city really beautify, and a lot of, it's always a sign of a city that's prospering, a lot of great restaurants in Belfast. It's become very much, you know, a European city and very much an international destination.
Mm-hmm. So when you went on your trip, what was it you were looking for?
I wrote about this in the cover story. So there's a sort of a second section of that cover story. It's a bit of a photo essay. But in that photo essay, I explained that normally when I go out on these trips on an assignment, I have a pretty good idea of what I'm looking for. So by way of example, Ireland through the years has put together these, I guess you could call them tourism packages. So by way of example, on the East Coast from Dublin down to Cork, you go through Wexford and Waterford, and there's a distinct trail there they call the Ancient East. Or on the West, you have the Wild Atlantic Way, which stretches from Cork in the south all the way to Donegal in the northwest. And there are all sorts of destinations on that route. So normally I have a pretty good understanding of what I'm looking for. This time around, that wasn't the case. Because it really came together quite quickly, Caitlin, at the end. In fact, we didn't know whether or not we were going to have a cover story from Belfast until about 2 weeks before we went to print. And then it was, you know, very quickly, okay, I have to get on a plane on a particular Monday, and I'm going to be there for 6 days. And it all happened very quickly. So I didn't have time to premeditate what I was going to look for. Instead, as I mentioned this in this sort of sub-article in the cover story, I got up every morning with just, you know, leaving the hotel with a pen and a notepad and a recording device, my iPhone and my Canon camera. And then at the end of the day over dinner, I would pore over my notes. And, you know, a story began to emerge over time. It was almost as if I allowed Belfast to speak through me or to speak to me and then through me. So what emerged upon return to North America, you know, that story had been percolating in my head for a few days. And when I did get home, I took a couple of days and it really just poured out of me. In fact, that's really the first time with Celtic Life that that has happened. And it was very exciting to watch it happen, actually. It was kind of cool. I almost felt like I was some sort of vehicle or medium for you know, the city of Belfast to say, hey, look at me now. How do you like me now? Kind of thing. So,
what was it that you found on your trip?
Well, you know, it's interesting because the peace process up there, for anybody who knows, you know, what the peace accord looked like, it's a very delicate matter. There's a number of parties involved. You have obviously the Catholic element, the Protestant element, and then you have the British element. So the government up there, Stormont, is and the peace accord is held together by a number of pieces through Stormont. And but you know what struck me, I think, the most was, you know, in spite of this, you know, very shaky peace accord and some of the challenges brought along by Brexit, and also, you know, of course, with the COVID pandemic, because so much of Ireland and Northern Ireland's economy runs on tourism. So, you know, all of a sudden that was all shut down. I mean, in Ireland alone, you're looking at, you know, a $7 billion a year industry that brought in zero for 2 years. So rebuilding through all of that. But I think despite all those difficulties, there's this real sense of optimism in Belfast that I hadn't seen before. You know, traditionally, when you talk to younger people, they were like, well, I can't wait to get out of here. And, you know, I'm going to America or I'm going to Canada. I've got cousins in Toronto or Boston or whatnot. It wasn't like that this time. All the younger people that I spoke to, they really were very content to stay put in their hometown. And there was a sense of pride there, like, well, look what we've done, you know, and really, to some degree, they've set a really a wonderful model of peace for the rest of the world. So you look at what's going on in the Middle East, or, you know, even what's going on with Russia and Ukraine, that peace can be achieved, provided people continue to talk and dialogue. And I think it was very interesting talking to a couple of young people, one from the Falls Road, and then just an hour later, talking to a young lady at the in the Shankill, the Protestant district. And, you know, the younger people who, hence the, you know, the title of the story, Belfast Reborn, younger people that were born in that generation in between the peace accord and now, who really have very little understanding or recollection or, you know, tolerance or even, you know, kind of any interest in the troubles, they are dialoguing, the young people, you know, whether it's online through social media, whether it's through messaging, whether it's in person, whether it's over the phone, whatever. Young people are speaking. And that's something that, you know, it's a lesson to be learned, I think, for the rest of the world, is that if we keep talking, if we continue to dialogue, even if it's at top volume and not always in the most pleasant tones, then sooner or later, one party or the other or both will start listening to the other. And so, you know, there's a sense of optimism that's arisen out of that, like, hey, you know what, we can do this. We can do this. And you sense it among the young people. Like, it was just great going out on a, you know, a Friday or Saturday night and sort of walking around downtown and having dinner and hitting a coffee shop after and just seeing the youthful enthusiasm there. So that was, I think, sort of the biggest change of what took place there.
I think that's amazing. So what were some of the highlights of your trip?
Well, if I'm to be quite honest, I found myself in a wonderful little cigar lounge in Reykjavik downtown, Cigar World, and it was an interesting spot. And every sort of late afternoon, I'd stop for tea and scones somewhere, and then afterwards, I'd hit the cigar lounge, and there were all these young men in there in their 20s and 30s and 40s, you know, sort of young, stylish men, and we would sit around having a stogie, and you know, the conversation was really brilliant because we had people from not just all walks of Belfast, but all walks of Europe and from around the world. I ran into people there from Australia and New Zealand, all of whom had some sort of connection to Ireland, whether it was, you know, family or professionally or through their education or whatnot. So it was the conversations, it was the people. That was really the highlight. I mean, yes, you've got to go see, you know, Titanic Museum, which is incredible. I saw the Game of Thrones studio tour, which was, you know, just shocking. I mean, it's like a museum like you've never experienced before. And of course, just the city itself, which is this wonderful combination of that English heritage in terms of architecture and style and perhaps, you know, that sort of cordial manner of the English, you know, that reserve, you know, But you also have the Irish warmth and the wit that's shown through. So it was really interesting to talk to people because on the one hand, they're very well-dressed and very polite, but they're also at the same time very funny and very warm. And nowhere did I experience that more than in that cigar lounge, actually. So it was a real highlight for me.
I know we talked briefly about the Troubles, but I was wondering what your impressions of the Troubles were in your most recent trip.
It's interesting. Again, when you walk through the Catholic Falls Road District and the British or the Protestant Shankill District, also known today, by the way, the Catholics are known as nationalists and the Protestants go by the term loyalists instead of Catholic Protestant, because it really is more of a political divide historically than it ever was really a religious divide, you know. And so it was very much an economic divide as well. But you know, having been up there during the Troubles and witnessed it firsthand, and I did have a rather unfortunate incident back in 1989 where I made the mistake of trying to cross the street during a loyalist parade and ended up having the boots put to me by about nine guys.
Oh, no.
I reached into my pocket at that point, held up my Canadian passport and said, "I don't know any better. I'm Canadian." And they were all very sheepish about it. They were like, "Oh, Jesus, boy, what have we done?" Mm-hmm. You know, and come on off to the pub. You must know my Uncle Charlie in Toronto and, you know, that kind of thing. But the mindset of the older generation, yeah, it's still there. And there are idiots everywhere, right? You know, if you look at where I grew up in Quebec, you still have idiots on both sides of that language divide. But it's very minimal these days. And again, you know, the future, hence the title of the piece, Belfast Reborn, the future is very bright with these younger people who, again, have very little tolerance or even sort of, I think, even an understanding of, you know, what their parents and what their grandparents went through. So are the Troubles alive and well? Yes, some people would say the tension is still there. It's kind of simmering below the surface. But, you know, every day of peace in Northern Ireland is a day closer to it being a lasting peace. And it was interesting, just even reading this morning, that there was a big rally up in Belfast yesterday. And it was all about the preservation of the Irish language. And there were over 100,000 people, which is about a fifth of the population of Belfast, who came out and demanding more money and more institutional infrastructure development, more education, more skills, more opportunities to promote and preserve the Irish language. So, you know, it's very much alive and well. We'll wait and see what, you know, how the loyalists respond. But again, mostly with the younger people, they just, they're past it. They've let it go.
Do you have any plans of returning?
Belfast, one of my favorite places in the world.
Mm-hmm.
It is. I've had the good fortune of having traveled all over the world. And, you know, my favorite cities, which I've shared through Celtic Life before, were, you know, places like Montreal, of course, my hometown, and Paris, you know, Florence and London, all the classic places. But then the smaller towns, you know, for me are places like Charleston, South Carolina, which I have a tremendous affinity for. Bill Murray lives in Charleston, South Carolina. That's all I'm going to say, you know, and he's been known to run around Charleston in his Ghostbusters outfit. I haven't seen it personally yet, but I'll keep going until I do. And Belfast is just one of those magical places. So yeah, of course, I do want to return, whether it's, you know, in a professional capacity or even from a personal capacity. I mean, every time I go off on these trips, and certainly this trip in particular, I make friends, people that I, you know, stay connected with by email or by Facebook or, you know, through social media or through texting or whatnot. So I have friends over there now, people that, you know, I've enjoyed these great conversations with. And, you know, I hope to continue and grow those relationships with those individuals. And, well, if I have to go over to Belfast and spend a couple nights hanging out with them, you know, there are worse things you could do. So.
Those are all of my questions today. I appreciate you taking a few minutes to speak with me.
Caitlin, that's fantastic. I appreciate the time, and I really encourage people to pick up the cover story and read it for themselves.
Thank you.
All right, Caitlin, thank you. We'll talk to you again soon.
Take care.
Ciao.
Hey, where did we go? Days when the rains came. Playing a new game, laughing and a running, hey, hey, skipping and a jumping in the misty morning fog with all our hearts are thumping, and you, my brown-eyed girl, and you, my brown-eyed girl, and whatever happened to Tuesday and so slow, gone down the old man with a transistor radio, standing in the sunlight laughing, hiding high a rainbow's wall, slipping and sliding all along the waterfall with you, my brown-eyed girl, and you, my brown-eyed girl. Do you remember when we used to sing sha-la-la? Just like that. Sha la 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 ti da, la ti da. So hard to find my way. Now that I'm all on my own, I saw you just the other day. You have grown. Cast my memory back there, Lord. Sometimes I'm overcome thinking about making love in the green grass behind the stadium with you, my brown-eyed girl, and you, my brown-eyed girl. Do you remember when we used to sing sha la 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 la. That was, of course, Brown Eyed Girl by the Belfast Bard himself, Van Morrison. A fun little anecdote before I head out today, but Brown Eyed Girl has been my favorite song since I was about 6 years old, and I used to be very upset that I didn't have brown eyes because I always wanted that song to be about me. Unfortunately, I've been stuck with this set of muddy green eyes that no one writes songs about. Anyway, that's all we have for our show today. Please remember to check out our website at CelticLifeIntl.com. That's CelticLifeIntl.com. I'm Caitlin Mearns, and we'll catch you next time.